Good evening. This evening, let's take our Bibles and turn to Jeremiah chapter 5. Jeremiah chapter 5. The passage begins with somewhat of an imperative type of command, and the Lord is speaking to Jeremiah, and he's saying, "Run ye to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, and see now, and know, and seek in the broad places thereof, if ye can find a man." I think we've got some secular information that's almost like this, where people are saying, go and search out, take a lantern and go and search through the world, see if you can find someone that has a particular characteristic. This one's a little more entailed than that one, and I would suggest that this is far more important than that. You know, it says to run to and fro through where? The streets of what city?
Jerusalem.
Now, I suppose that you would say that's really quite a job, because today Jerusalem is about 500,000 people. In those days, the city of Jerusalem was probably a good deal smaller. At about the time of Christ, the city of Jerusalem was considered to be about, maybe 20,000-25,000 people. Now, that would be the same size as taking Ford City, Katanning, West Katanning, West Hills, Worthington, and then add in the city of Butler, and put all that together in one spot. And then that would be kind of like the extent of the command that would be here. And Jeremiah is now, it doesn't say walk, does it? It says he's to run. And notice there's four things that are involved here. He's to run, and then the second one is to see. Now, to see now, it's kind of the idea that Jeremiah, you know, don't go over to the neighbor's house and sit down and talk for 2 hours, and then over to somebody else and talk for 2 hours, just because it's, some of us may not be in a condition. I think even the pastor said this not too long ago. He's not in a condition to be going out and running a whole lot. I think he likes to walk some, but that might be even a test for myself. I don't think I get too excited about walking across the bridge into Katanning. But this was a lot further than that distance, and he's supposed to run. Apparently he must have been some bit of a younger man. Run and see now. He's to be looking for, because this is a situation of importance that is to be involved there. In fact, that running to and forth is kind of like the idea where this takes on the meaning of the sense that if he was in a rowboat or something like this, you take your oars and pull it, and then that's two, and then you pick the oars up, and that would be fro, and dip them and pull them again. It's the idea of really putting in some effort into this, where you would be maybe even having a race with this kind of a thing. And now you could also catch the idea here is that if you're running through the streets, and the streets in Jerusalem in those days were probably not different than what you would find in the streets of Jerusalem today. You'll go down the streets, and over here there's a brick wall and homes, and then over here there's a brick wall and homes. And apparently it could be the idea that he's going from door to door, back and forth, or anybody who might be standing and sitting out in front of the door or about, but searching out. And he's not just going to look and to just see, but he's to do it now. And the idea is to gain some information in relationship to this seeing. He's supposed to know and to take people who he's coming up to and gaining some information relating to them, and he's to seek even in the broad places. Now, where would the broad places be? Well, I suppose you'd have the town square, you'd have where the market is. You would have areas that in a city, any city has certain areas that are more open than others. And so this is where he's to seek, in the broad places there. The other place that could be related to this is in many of the towns of Israel, near the walls of the city, the entrance of the city, apparently there was a broad place in relationship to the gate where the men of the city who were wise would sit, and they would perhaps make judgment. If I had a complaint against you, I'd grab you by the collar and haul you down to the city gate there and say, I've got a complaint against this man, and then they would judge between us as to what's right or wrong or just or whatever it might be. So I suppose that could be included in the idea of the broad places with that respect too. Now notice what he's looking for. And in the rest of that first verse it says, if you can find a man, if there be any that executeth judgment and that seeketh the truth. Now, it says there, if you can find, does it say men? If you can find how many? Well, they're looking for one. And we're talking about a city that's 15,000 to 25,000 people, depending on how many were there at the time of Jeremiah. And they're looking to find a man, just one man, if there be any that executeth judgment. Now, I'm presuming here that a person who is executing judgment is able to say, okay, this is the situation of life about me, and I'm going to make a verdict as to whether this is good or bad, right or wrong, true, false, something like this. And that verdict that judgment would have to be in relationship to truth. And so here we see this situation that truth determines what's right and what's wrong. God determines that, and so then man has to agree with it. That's where judgment comes in. And so we're looking at this with the idea that is there some kind of firmness of opinion that can be had regarding any matter or opinion. So we having truth involved here, and we're having truth that isn't going to change. The pastor talked about truth that has fidelity, it keeps always being truth, and it's morally so in that sense that it doesn't change, it doesn't adjust according to circumstances. It really is true. It is true in every time, every situation, and every circumstance. And so here we are looking for how many people? One man. Just one man. That's all he's looking for. Just one man. And then after it says, if there be any that executeth judgment, that seeketh the truth, and I will pardon it. Pardon it? That's pardon the city, isn't it? Now, the city's in trouble, apparently. The city is worthy of a verdict to be going against it, and they need pardoning. In fact, when we're talking about a pardon, we're talking about that which puts a man into custody and constraints for a long period of time, and oftentimes a pardon is spoken of in relationship to death row. I don't know, Steve, have you heard of anybody being pardoned just because of a petty theft or anything like that particularly? It's usually a really serious crime, isn't it? Probably worthy of death row or something that is of high concern. I guess the presidents will pardon certain people who have committed high crimes and put them back on the street about the time they get out of office. It's known to have a little flurry of that in federal prisons off and on. But here is a city needing a pardon. And when we look at that city that needs a pardon, I would like to ask you a question. Can you remember back in the days way back before the time of Jeremiah, when there was a city that needed a pardon. That God sent some angels, and they stopped by and ate with Abraham along the way, heading for what? Sodom and Gomorrah. And I guess there were four cities there that were involved that had done despicable things, very, very awful things, worthy that God was planning on raining down fire and brimstone upon those cities to destroy them, because they had deserved such a judgment that was against them. And Abraham said, well, if there's 50 people, or 45, or 40, or 35, or 30, or going on down, remember, Sodom, there was one righteous man that apparently understood judgment and understood truth, and God took him out of that city, and the judgment came upon Sodom and Gomorrah. Now we see here a situation of mercy in relationship to Jerusalem that's of perhaps similar concern in the eyes of God, in that His truth was violated. And now we have a people who are facing potential this kind of situation, and God says, Jeremiah, go run through the city, through and fro, through the city of Jerusalem, see now and know, and seek in the broad places there if you can find a man. And here's the conditions of finding him. He has to be one that can execute judgment and seek the truth. That's the two conditions. Execute judgment and seek the truth. Find a man, and that city would be released. They would be pardoned. Well, the situation is that when he looks and searches out these people, in verse 2 it says, and though they say, the Lord liveth, they surely swear falsely. I think our country is not so far from that situation. I'm a Christian. I fear God. But they don't execute judgment in relationship to their own lives, and they don't seek the truth. They don't make a decision determined based upon truth that never changes, that which has fidelity, moral fidelity, and it's firmly so, never changes. Though they say the Lord liveth, surely he sweareth falsely. O Lord, verse 3, are not thine eyes upon what? Now, if the Lord's eyes are on the truth, everything else that is seen in relationship is seen in relationship to that truth. That's what compares. There is the standard of comparison. All other activities and all other thoughts and all other ways of people are compared against that truth. O Lord, are not thine eyes upon the truth? And now, here's what's happened. Thou hast stricken them, but they have not grieved. Thou hast consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than a rock. They have refused to return. Look at the people that are in our world today. They say there is no such thing as truth. If there is truth, it's relative. It adjusts according to whatever I like to see it to be, and I'm the determiner, the decider of truth. And so then they make themselves a god by doing that. And the Lord hath stricken them. He's talking about Jerusalem, the people that are there. Now you go back and read through 2 Chronicles, you should read through after the time of Solomon, and then all of the sorrows and the difficulties that faced the city of Jerusalem in those years that followed before they were taken into full captivity. And they had a lot of problems that came their way. Thou hast stricken them. You see, the Lord, O Lord, are not thine eyes upon the truth? Thou hast stricken them, but they have not grieved. When difficulties come in our country, are our people grieving? When difficulties come our way and God has consumed us, the city of New Orleans was pretty well consumed, wasn't it? When the hurricane came through, You go and take some of those southern cities the last couple of years, and we've had these huge tornadoes come through, the big blockbuster tornadoes coming through the southern states. The cities are torn up. Some of them are literally taken off the map for all practical purposes. They have been consumed. But apparently, as a country, we have refused to receive correction. Think about this now. A child, when they are corrected, sometimes their spirit is broken and they say, "Yes, Mommy, yes, Daddy," and they obey. Other times, stiff neck, get the hackles up, they're going to fight to the end. That's the comparison that's involved here. They refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than rock. And we have people in our country, when they are confronted with right and wrong, they make their faces harder than rock. They have refused to return. Oh, remember the last chapter? Return unto the Lord. Starts out. Return unto the Lord in chapter 2 also. And we find that this is a theme that's continuing on. These people have refused to return. In verse 4, "Therefore I said, surely these are poor. They are foolish, for they know not the way of the Lord, nor the judgment of God." Well, now, the way of the Lord is the way of truth, isn't it? And the judgment of the Lord, these are the two things that Jeremiah is to search through the city of Jerusalem, to execute judgment and seek the truth. And so here we see the way of the Lord, that's the way of truth, and the judgment of their God. They ought to be agreeing with Him concerning that which is right and wrong. But notice here, the second phrase there in verse 4, "Surely these are poor, they're foolish." Now the presumption that we have now from top leaders of governments who tend to say, well, if the people are poor, they're also foolish. And because they're poor and foolish, obviously they can't be ones who would be any kind of leadership or any kind of help to anybody. And we can't, they're obviously, just because of that nature of being poor and foolish, we set them aside. So then we come to verse 5, and because those people are dismissed in the eyes of anything that's in leadership, verse 5 it says, "I will get me unto great men, and will speak unto them." So here's Jeremiah searching the poor. He have to be eventually be dismissed because it's just obviously none of them are probable. And so then he goes for the great men. These would be the people who would be perhaps the business owners, those who would be in charge of the market. Of course, you would have the priests that would be potentially living, or the Levites living in the city. You would have those who would be at the gates, who would be making judgment concerning difficulties between different peoples, the elders of the city. And so, "I will get me into the great men, and I will speak unto them. For they..." Now notice here, the great men, this is a presumption that's made about them. "For they have known the way of the Lord." So I'm going to go to them. They're educated. You can't think the uneducated are going to be knowledgeable. So we're going to go to the great men. They're obviously educated. "The way of the Lord, and have judgment of their God. But these have altogether broken the yoke and have burst the bonds." So we haven't gone any farther with them either, have we? Yeah, they know. Yeah, so this talks about people who've learned how to read. These talks about people who have entered into positions of authority. These talk about people who have leadership in different areas of their life. And it says, they've broken the yoke and burst the bonds. So they say, "I'm the one who's in charge. I'm the boss in this town. I'm going to do the way I want and as I would please." And folks, we have troubles in even Katanning, and even in Ford City, and even in Butler, and even in the countryside, which is round about us. Those who are leaders sometimes think, "The rules are for you poor folk. I obviously won't do wrong. Even if I change and shave the situation a little bit to my advantage, obviously it's for your good and my good, and how would you ever want to blame me? They've broken the yoke and burst the bonds, and they don't have to live under the law because they're above the law, because they're in the leadership. They are the people who are the great men that are there. So now we come to verse 6, and we find that there are consequences that are involved here. Wherefore, this seems strange. The consequences says, wherefore a lion out of the forest shall slay them, a wolf in the evening shall spoil them, a leopard shall watch over their cities. Everyone that goeth out thence shall be torn in pieces, because their transgressions are many and their backslidings are increased. I don't know that any of you have been challenged by a lion such as we would see in a zoo, you know, the big old mangy collar that's around them and such as that. And I don't know exactly if that's the lion that's involved there in this, or maybe we're talking about mountain lions. When I lived in Florida, the mountain lion and the leopard tended to have the same name and same identification. And the leopard shall watch over their cities. Everybody's told that a wolf is just a gentle doggy. It's not the wolf that was causing all of the trouble in the 1800s and was attacking people in their homes. Of course, we just had a news article in the newspaper today concerning wolves at a zoo mauled a woman. Wolves aren't dangerous, are they? And so you have a pack of wolves roaming through the streets. It wouldn't be hard for that to happen here in Katanning and in this area. We don't have walls on our cities. Keep them out. And so you walk out after dark, or walk out in the early morning, or maybe even at midday. The wolves, of course, I'm familiar with the leopard, because from between my house in Citrus Springs and the church, which was just a mile apart, Jenny was driving between the two locations, and along the side of the road was a leopard. Big old long tail like this, just kind of wandering along the side of the road. Pasture just a couple miles away from me. Had one that would come to his house on several occasions, and used to come into his backyard and circle the bush, chasing the rabbits and any other small animals that were in the bush, trying to keep protected from it. And while we never had trouble with the leopard as far as attacking people there where we live, he came through every 5 years and cleaned out all of the small game. I'm just glad that there was plenty of small game for him to clean out, because that meant that when I was out hauling the garbage from the garage out to the street, I didn't have one leaping on my back coming after me. Although we had in one of the parks a fellow who was backpacking, and he had one of these backpacks that were a little bit taller in his head, probably with the sleeping bag on the top. And a leopard came or mountain lion came and attacked him from the rear and clawed that top of that backpack like mad, like he would do your head if you were out in the woods and trying to kill him. And his best advantage was is that there was a bear nearby that thought that was unfair and chased the lion off. Otherwise, he might not have been around today to tell the story, because he is apparently hungry. So don't think that this is any small threat that had to be with regard to Jerusalem, especially in regard to the children and regard to the adults. These animals will attack anybody they choose. And by the way, you're not going to outrun them. They are extremely fast. They can move. Okay, so we're talking about consequences. And when you see a country filling up with wolves, and you see a country filling up with mountain lions, and you see a country filling up with lions, I would think that might be an issue that you might be concerned about as far as your own safety and health. And in particular, God uses these animals to judge a nation. Now, you understand, most of you, when you were children, young children, we didn't have wolves. We didn't have coyotes in any number at all. In most parts of the country, we did not have the leopard, but we have, or the mountain lion, we have those all in this area right now where we live. So you think that this is not something to be an issue, to be concerned about. And is God preparing this nation, this country, for the same kind of things? Because they do not have an interest. They do not have an interest in the way of the Lord, the judgment of God. They just aren't concerned about His truth and His judgment. And so, verse 7, how shall I pardon thee for this? Thy children have forsaken me, and have sworn by them that are not gods, or no gods. They, when I have fed them to the full, they have committed adultery, and assembled themselves by troops in the harlots' houses. They were fed as horses in the morning, and every one neighed after his neighbor's wife. Now, this is a direct allusion, not only to a literal situation, but it's an allusion directly to that which would be called idolatry. And if you count yourself more important in opinion than God's opinion, you are involved directly, actively in idolatry. Like Pastor said this morning, you are to be in submission. The choice is, to whom will you submit? Do you submit to God, who is the Creator, who made us, or do you submit to you, yourself, and I? Me, myself, and I guess that's a better way to put it. Me, myself, and I, do I submit to my own opinion and hold that is more important than the opinion of God or those around me? And this submission also relates to the authorities that God places over us, who are rightfully there. So here we have this idolatry that's have sworn by them that are no gods. I swear by myself, I shall do. By God's grace and by His permission and by His by that which He is pleased with, as I fear Him, I will do these things. But I do it because I am permitted and allowed to do it. And so we go to verse 9. Shall not I visit these things, saith the Lord? And this would be the judgments. You see, if truth is involved in my life, and I don't judge properly in relationship to truth as far as my actions are concerned, then I'm going to be doing that which deserves these kinds of things. Shall I not visit these things, saith the Lord, and shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation? Shall I not visit these things relates to the idea of truth, that his standard is there, and shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this, has to do with the judgment that's involved, God's opinion, and his action in relationship to obedience to his will. So we go to verse 10, and it says, go ye upon her walls. Now that's Jerusalem. I would think, go ye upon her walls, and destroy, and make not a full end. Take away her battlements, for they are not the Lord's. So, we have all these protections we lay around us. I become a great man, and so I put a battlement of people around me who will defend me if someone comes and says a mean word towards me. And then I might also lay up some arms and some things that are related to that protection which I need. And these very things we have to be careful of when we're talking about this kind of thing. If I am not interested in the truth of God and judging myself in relationship to that truth, all of these things are of no use and no help. You know, all I have to do is just go out the door and that leopard jump on me and I'm done. All the armament in the world may not necessarily protect me if I can't get to it, because I have had my arms bitten and and all the injuries that would be related to that. Verse 11, "For the house of Israel and the house of Judah have dealt very treacherously against me, saith the Lord." Treacherously. If I choose my own way over God's way, that's treachery. And by the way, when I choose my way over God's way, it's treachery in respect to you too, because if I'm not interested in righteousness and truth that comes, righteousness which comes from truth, if I'm not interested in that, you're in physical jeopardy, personal jeopardy, mental jeopardy. You are in jeopardy. "And so the house of Israel has dealt treacherously against the Lord," said, "against me, saith the Lord. They have belied the Lord." Now, God says, "Do this." And I say, "Later." God says, "Do this." And I say, "No." God says, "Do this." And I say, "I'll do it my way." Now, think about this. When I do this, I call him untrue. That's treachery. When I do this, I say his message is untrue. He has feigned that which ought to be because I like my way better. And I am of the opinion that he should be disowned. If I call him a liar, that's disowning him, isn't it? "They have belied the Lord and have said, it is not he. Neither shall evil come upon us. Neither shall we see sword or famine." Now, who's going to stop famine? If the Lord puts famine into our community, who's going to stop it? If the Lord brings... Now, see, we don't worry about this because we've never had an army come across our country. So why would we worry about it? If you lived in Europe, yeah, you'd have hordes and armies and stuff coming this way and coming that way. But wait a minute now. "We shall see neither sword nor famine," but what's happening in the malls? Crowds of people coming and attacking individuals. It hasn't happened here in Pittsburgh that I know of, but it's happened in other areas. And it's happening rather frequently. So maybe this isn't so small of a thing. If we are a people and a nation who choose not to follow after the things of the Lord. And then in verse 13 it talks about the prophets. The prophets, they're important people. "They shall become wind." Now think about this. All I have to do is come over to your house and talk. Never give you a chance to get another word in edgewise for an hour and a half. And who's going to call who windy? Think about that. "The prophets shall become wind, and the word is not in them." Now, I suppose I could come and talk. I don't know why you come and sit here for a half hour and listen to me for 40 minutes. You could say, he's windy enough as it is. But if the word is not in him, that makes it even less. "Thus shall it be done unto them, the prophets. For you see, the same verdict is going to come upon them." Verse 14, "Wherefore thus saith the Lord." And this is kind of a very important verse that's right here. We could almost call it a memory verse. "Wherefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, because ye speak this word, behold, I will make my words in thy mouth a fire." Now, notice here, this apparently is Jeremiah that's being spoken of here. The Lord is doing this. He's putting words in Jeremiah's mouth, as it was indicated in chapter 1. And so he's saying, "I will make my words in thy mouth a fire." Now, if I were to stop there, he'd say, okay, so it's blazing hot. He really knows how to preach and put this stuff out. But notice the effect of fire in the next phrase. "And this people, a what?" Now, it doesn't take a whole lot of fire to make it quite a big blaze. My grandfather put a big pile of brush out in the yard, maybe from that light to the wall, and probably so high, and maybe from here to the piano, and he'd pour a little kerosene on it, and then he'd just take one little match. Now, the wood burns very nicely after that. Flames rise up 20 feet into the air, and nice dry brush that he used. And so it was something that was really quite something to behold. And so, but when Jeremiah had God's words in his mouth, this people being a wood, and it shall devour them. And your mouth could be just as much a fire as Jeremiah's mouth. You see, if we take God's word and take true concepts and true ideas which are from God, and we pass it and speak it to other people, they become accountable. They become accountable. And maybe this is one of the reasons that they don't like to be around sometimes people like you or myself when we would speak to them. This isn't according to God's will. This can bring judgment into our lives, your life. Have you noticed they become angry? When's the last time you put something that was hot against your arm? You fight back. You say, wait a minute, this is destroying me. I don't like it. But in a real sense, for the wicked, judgment comes upon them. And for the wicked Jerusalem, judgment was going to come upon them, and it will devour them. And we know from history that's exactly what happened. God eventually sent a nation from the outside, and we'll hopefully get to that in the last part of this chapter. For lo, it even brings it on here and suggests it in verse 15, for lo, I will bring a nation upon you from far, O house of Israel, saith the Lord. Now this nation is something that there's several characteristics that are given here. It's a mighty nation. It's an ancient nation. It's a nation whose language thou knowest not, neither understandest what they say. Now, how many of you are prepared to speak Russian or Chinese? You get these kinds of people speaking to you, and it's a nation we don't know, and it's a nation we don't understand. And yet, you know, we're not so far away from that. Just outside of Milan, Michigan, that's a little bit west of Detroit and south, about just a little bit southeast of Jackson, Michigan. The Chinese have purchased a large tract of land whereby they're planning to bring in tens of thousands of their own citizens to park them there and to build a city and to build a manufacturing plant of various purposes. And they're going to have that city right in the middle of this countryside, not very far from what used to be one of the greatest cities of the world, Detroit. And it would only take them 4 or 5 years to build that city, and then we would have a nation within our borders whose language we cannot speak, and who our language they will not be interested in learning to speak, because they will be within the bounds of their own city. And that same situation, I understand, is scheduled to be here in Pennsylvania, a little further east of here, on the other end of the state perhaps. Maybe there's one closer, I don't know. There's another one in Idaho that's being established, that the land is already purchased and they're planning to set up. You know, maybe we're not so far from being, as a nation here in the United States, coming under the judgment of God, where you have enough of these set up and we no longer have to worry about people coming from over the sea in ships to conquer us. They'll already be in place. Is this so far-fetched as far as we would be in relationship to what would happen to Jerusalem, and did happen to Jerusalem even back then? And notice that the quiver of these people that came there, their quiver is as an open sepulcher. Sepulchers, what's that for? That's where you put dead people. And so death is their quiver. And so their quiver is an open sepulcher. They are all mighty men. They shall eat up. Now here's what they're going to eat. Your harvest, your bread, your sons and daughters, that they should be eating. They shall eat up the flocks of thine herds, they shall eat up thy vines and their fig trees, and they shall impoverish. They will impoverish what? The fenced cities wherein thou trustest with a sword. Folks, we are so close to this of being impoverished by people from the outside. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. You think it doesn't happen? I asked you, where's the industry in Youngstown? Where are all the steel plants that are there? Those massive, massive factories that are there. What happened to the glass plant in Ford City? What's happened to this to Typewriter Hill? What happened to all of the steel in Pittsburgh? Now they think they're recovering from this by going into high-tech industry. But you go into Butler, and where's the car manufacturing? Are we not being impoverished even now, even though the enemy is far, far away? What's happening to Detroit? It's nothing. They're in bankruptcy. In fact, our own capital is in bankruptcy, Harrisburg. So we're talking about this. Perhaps these things which we should be concerned with for our own local area, these kinds of things are true because we are not interested in truth and in judgment concerning that the righteous things of God. And there's too many people that are going their own way, making themselves their own gods and not following after the ways of the Lord. I see a marvelous comparison here that perhaps we are in the midst of serious judgment in our own country and we don't even know it. We say, that doesn't happen. I'm taking care of myself. Who cares? Nevertheless, in those days, saith the Lord, I will make full end with you. And this is to Jerusalem and Israel. And it will come to pass when ye shall say, wherefore doth the Lord our God do these things unto us? Then shalt thou answer them, like as thou hast forsaken me and served strange gods in your land, so shall ye serve strangers in a land that is not yours. I don't know whether we'll be taken out of this land and hauled over somewhere else, although there's it's called Agenda 21, which says they're going to take people off all the countryside and put them into cities along the rivers and special corridors, and maybe that could be the same kind of thing that could happen here. I mean, that's in planning. They just had a planning session of that in Chicago, and they're having another one in Mexico probably in another week or so. This kind of stuff is actively involved. And this isn't even, they're trying to make some treaties to cause this to affect it. But folks, this isn't so far-fetched as we might think. And we say, wherefore doth the Lord our God do all these things unto us? Where does he do it? It's not happening here. Oh yeah, I'm not so sure. Because then shalt thou answer them, like as ye have forsaken me and served strange gods, there, verse 19, in your land, so shall ye serve strangers in a land that is not yours. Declare this in the house of Jacob and publish in Judah, saying, hear this, O foolish people. Those who say God's not involved in this. Hear this, O foolish people, and without understanding, which have eyes and see not, which have ears and hear not. All these things are happening right in front of Israel and Jerusalem, and they're happening right in front of us too. The very same things in many ways. And I don't see it. I don't hear it. That's what people are saying, aren't they? It's right in front of us. And verse 22 it says, fear ye not me, saith the Lord. Will ye not tremble in my presence? Which have placed the sand for the bound of the sea by the perpetual decree, and it cannot pass it. Of course, they deny that he's the creator. And though the waves thereof toss themselves, and yet can they not prevail through, though they roar, yet can they not pass over it, the sand, the shore? God keeps the boundaries. He's done it. The evidence is obviously placed. Fear ye not me, saith the Lord. But this people, verse 23, have a revolting and rebellious heart. And there's the problem. the heart revolts against God. It's rebellious. They are revolted and gone. Neither say they in their heart, now let us fear the Lord our God, that giveth rain, both the former and the latter, in his season. He reserveth unto us the appointed weeks of the harvest. Your iniquities have turned away from these things, and your sins have beholden or withholden good things from you. Now, this is a very important verse right here. Your iniquities have turned away the good things from you. That's what it's saying here. It's my iniquities that prevent me from enjoying the good. And also, I have to understand this. It's very plain in the scriptures. My sins have withholden good things from me. Now, if good things are turned away from me and good things are withheld from me, it's because of my iniquities and my sins. And this is true to a nation. This is true to a city. This is true to any people. We have to keep this in mind. People say, you know, we have this big storm in New Orleans and it floods the whole city and they have all kinds of trouble for 40 days. It's their iniquities and their sins that these things take place. It is not God's fault, it is their fault. And it's our fault as a nation, because our nation is judged in this. 9/11, our nation is judged. So we lost a city, lost two buildings in New York City. Well, that collapsed our economy here in Catan. We lost factories in Catan because of those buildings going down. And so, as a nation, these kinds of things are very, very serious. For among my people are found wicked men. They lay wait, as they that set snares, they set a trap, they catch men. The cage is full of birds, so that their houses are full of deceit. So are their houses full of deceit. Therefore they are become great and waxen rich. They are waxed fat, they shine, yet they overpass the deeds of the wicked. Now, see, this is saying the good people deeds far exceed that of those who are normally thought as wicked. The good people, we call themselves good. They judge not the cause of the fatherless, yet they prosper, and the right of the needy do they not judge. Shall I not visit these things, saith the Lord? Shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? You see, if he visits these things, he's doing that which is righteous, because they are wicked. And when his soul avenges such things, we find that this is the determination. You have done wrong. You deserve what you get. A wonderful and horrible thing is committed in the land. Now, this isn't wonderful in the sense of good. This is wonderful in the sense that it causes great wonder and it fills me with awe. That this happens when people expect otherwise. Horrible things are committed in the land. The prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means, and the people love to have it so. What will you do in the end thereof? Yeah, the people love to have this corruption going on. But what will you do in the end when you receive the judgment? Dear Heavenly Father, such as this causes our hearts to be stirred. And yet, with this kind of a message, when we speak to those who have no interest or have apparently no cause to follow after you, I pray, Father, that they might have an ear that will hear and eyes that will see. But is it going to be like in Jerusalem for Jeremiah? He goes and searches, even for a man. Is there not one? May it be that we shall be counted as one. I shall be counted as one. Father, may we be most careful in our duties, and may we warn those who are round about. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.